Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, July 17th, 2012, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar, Anastasia, and Sierra. We've got a very powerful show for you this evening, starting with our new Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing current events of interest to Starseed, including UFOs and astronomical happenings. Tonight's lead stories are about the pyramids, power, space-time crystals, and zero-point energy. We'll also have a quick visit from Renee Barnett with some very exciting information about her upcoming France trip at the beginning of the show. Lavendar is bringing another important piece out of the vault this evening called Key Codes to Empowerment of Starseed. This is very advanced and powerful information that was given to her to hold with discernment until now. The author of this transmission will be revealed at the end. You may need to listen to it more than once to fully comprehend the key codes, but once you do, a new level of activation will begin. Our guest author this evening is Robert Stemmen, an investigative journalist from England who specializes in most aspects of the paranormal. Because of the time difference, his interview was pre-recorded earlier. His newest work, The Big Book of Reincarnation, is completely fascinating as he reveals his findings from four decades of research, including accounts about the reincarnations of historical figures. His book can be found on Amazon.com and his personal blog at ParanormalReview.com. We want to thank Chris for hosting the switchboard this evening, and we invite you to call in with questions or comments tonight, and that number is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you like our show, we encourage you to click follow on our show page. You'll get our show notices, and it will help promote our show and guests. And then remember to tell a few friends about us. For our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. We'd also like to thank Rose, Anastasia, and Sahar for their continuing great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed Forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. We'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. We also offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for readings, especially with contactees and abductees. And if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And please allow 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure you get it in time. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar, Anastasia, and Sierra. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Lavendar here.
Hello. Hi there.
Well, good evening, everyone.
Good evening. We have quite the show for you this evening. And first off, though, we are going to start with a visit from our good friend, Renee Barnett. So hang on a second. Let me get your mic open. Click, click, click. Okay. Hey, Renee, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, we're doing just wonderful, and it's nice to hear from you.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you having me back on. You and Lavendar and the whole gang have just been so wonderful, and I'm so excited to be talking about my favorite subject again.
Well, let's have it.
All right. Well, as you know, my passion in life is the study of the sort of the so-called Rennell Chateau mystery, which encompasses so much. you know, the Holy Grail, Jesus and Mary Magdalene, ancient Celtics and Druids and Knights Templar. And it's just such a huge volume of information that even though I've been looking into it for about 35 years now, I'm telling off on myself a little bit, but I still feel like there's so much to know. But I also know that, you know, as you know, Gloria Amendola and I do these tours to France, and we've done them to England, and I think we're going to next year include something to Spain and possibly Portugal. But she and I have both been studying this information. This is our favorite place, Southwest France, in the entire world. And it's amazing how some of the research has started to come together, and we believe that we're finding some real solid answers to things. And then we're also going to be hooking up while we're down there with some other authors and researchers who have some new information as well. So this particular trip, because of the timing of it, in 2012 and at the autumn equinox and the other alignments that are coming into play, we just feel like things are coming, and they're coming fast. Information, evidence, and so I can't wait to get over there and actually confirm it all on the ground. And also, of course, you know, there's so many places where we'll return, where we always go, to the, you know, Templar and Cathar castles, and to the village of Rennes-le-Château, to the amazing healing waters, different places in the area, some new secret ones that we found out about that we're going. And Gloria is going to lead us in some ceremony on the equinox at some of these amazing places. And we'll probably be, you know, planting our little seeds there, our crystals or whatever it is that people want to do. But we're really looking forward to it. The tour is September the 16th to the 22nd. And anyone interested in it, please let me know. You can look me up on Facebook at Renee Barnett. That's R-E-N-E Barnett 1 on Facebook. And there's also a couple of pages for the tour on Facebook. It's called Secrets of Southwest France. One says Secrets of Southwest France. The other one is Secrets of South France Tour. But they're connected. They're the same event. Mm-hmm. So anyone interested in, or let Ariel Lavendar know, and they'll pass along the information, or you can email me directly at reneekbarnett@gmail.com. But we'd love to, for those who are feeling the call, we feel it's a very powerful time. We'd love to have you with us.
Well Renee, this is Lavendar, and, you know, we just got back from France in May, and I thought about you a lot while I was over there. Every time I saw the name Renee LaChateau, I thought, oh, there's Renee.
Right.
I know that you were named that for a reason. I've told you that before. Anyway, if anyone's listening that feels the urge to go to France this September, we won't be going again probably till next May. But if you want to have the experience of your life, I know that Renee and Gloria will certainly open the door for such an occasion.
Oh, well, I really appreciate that. You know, and when I was talking just a moment ago about planting things over there, I was thinking about you, because if you remember, it was, gosh, when was that 2 or 3 years ago when you sent me the little crystals?
A couple of years, yeah, the Giza crystals, yeah.
Yes, the Giza crystals, and those things are planted all over that place now. We planted them at some key spots, and it was wonderful. They were the tiniest little double-terminated crystals I had ever seen in my life. They were just gorgeous, and so we just sprinkled them in all kinds of wonderful little spots over there. But we'll be joined by, we just found out that we're going to be joined by Tim Wallace Murphy, who's, you know, best-selling author, and he's written a lot about the Knights Templar and about Rex Deus and the bloodline of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and also Henry Lincoln, who's sort of the grandfather of the entire mystery. And you know, who knows? We usually end up having some add-on that's at the end, but those are the ones that I can tell you for sure that will be there along with us. So I'm really looking forward to that, just getting back there. And as you know, Lavendar, we do these tours to continue our research, to help support our continuing research. And I believe, you know, that we can say that we won't disappoint this time, because we both have some new revelations, some secrets to tell. And I understand there's going to be some other people there that I can't really talk about just yet, who are also going to be revealing some new information that they have come upon. I just feel like this year is kind of the year. Everything seems to be popping up, either popping up right out of the ground, or information is being delivered that, you know, just amazingly. And so many synchronicities are coming up this year that I think this should be very, very special. And you know, Lavendar, from when you were there, that the waters there are just amazing. There's even the still operational Roman baths there in Renlaban, which
just
blows my mind.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to get any of the waters there, but I know that they're there, and that would be great if somebody could experience that. And let me ask you, Renee, do you still have some of those Giza crystals? Because if you don't, I'll be sure and get you some more. And other people are emailing me and telling me that the Gizas are starting to change color. Some are gold, some are pink, some are lavender. And
oh,
I sent some to Australia, and she told me that, you know, they arrived, you know, down there. I just sent them about a week ago, and they're already purple. So I don't know what's going on with these Gizas. They were clear quartz when they left me, and now they've changed color. So have you looked at yours lately? Do you still have some?
I do not. I planted them all. And, in fact, I had a few left when I left France the last time, and I left those in London at a particular spot.
Oh, okay.
So I did not keep any for myself. I wish I had kept just a few so I could have observed any change, if there was any, but I don't. It'd be amazing to see those today, to see whether they had changed.
You email me your mailing address. I'll get you some off this week.
Oh, I as soon as I get off here, I'm definitely going to send you my mailing address.
Okay,
but
I will.
Why would you think, Lavendar, what would that indicate, a change in color like that?
What? I don't have a clue. No one told me. You know, I've had these crystals since 1983, and the last batch was, of course, the man that I was with. I used to send him to the post office, and he would mail them out. But what I didn't know was he'd open up the package and take some out, and he went and put them in a bank vault. So when he died, his daughter sent me a box, and I opened up, and there was 10 pounds of these Giza crystals. I just about freaked out. I thought, oh, my goodness, my assignment wasn't complete. They should have been, you know, delivered all over the world like I promised, and here they are, you know, 20 years later, or what am I going to do? But here's the thing. We have them now, and we're planning them all over the world. And I guess it was he was told to do it. You know, I got kind of upset with him, you know, about it. Of course, he had died, and I wasn't able to chew him out. But anyway,
he probably hears you right now, Lavendar. But you know, it is amazing. Those little crystals were just they're the tiniest little things, but they were perfect. They were just so beautiful.
And they're so powerful. You know, I said, well, how powerful are they? When I it was given to him, and I said, well, it's 7 million times celestial power. And I said, well, wait a minute, I don't even know what you're talking about. And they said, well, you don't have any technology on the planet to even measure them. And then I was out of my league of this discussion. So I said, okay, you know, I'll just take them. And they told me to distribute them, and people would know what to do with them. And they put them all over the world. And we've got them in some really key places in government, in buildings, trees, mountains, streams, lakes, power points, gem power points, sacred places. They're everywhere.
It's really interesting. And, you know, I think we know very little about crystals, but I think science is finally now starting to bear out some of what we've always known about them, and probably you're going to reveal even more about them, because they're just amazing. And there's no doubt that the ancients knew what the power was and how to use that.
Well, the thing that was revealed to me when I wrote that little crystal book was, the one common denominator between all planets in our universe is quartz crystal. It is a communication device that is a frequency that happens from planet to planet.
Oh, man. Now, you guys are going to Arkansas, right?
Yeah, we're going in October, yeah.
Oh, I tell you, the best quartz crystals in the world from that very place.
And Coleman has a new video up of his latest find, and it's just mind-blowing, just mind-blowing.
Oh, you were telling me about that. And, you know, that place is much more important. That eastern Oklahoma, Arkansas area is much more important than you and I, that's our old stomping grounds, that's our backyard. So, it seems funny now that having grown up in that area and then going all over the world and back and read all these books and everything, and my research is now leading me right back to my old backyard. It blows my mind. But you guys will have a lot of fun, and hopefully, maybe I'll figure out a way to get around on that trip, but that would be amazing, because that definitely is some of the land that I love around that area. The Ozarks are just absolutely gorgeous, and I believe they're very powerful, and I believe that they're very, very important items of great, great, great importance buried in that area.
Absolutely.
For a long, long time.
That's kind of the reason that we're going, and we will invite you to, Renee, to stop back in and talk some more about this. We do have a lot of things we got to get to tonight, so thank you so much.
I'm interested in that reincarnation stuff. I want to hear that.
Well, stay on the line. We've got
I'm listening on my computer, so I will listen from home. And, again, I just want to say thank you so much for having me back. It's always a pleasure. I've got to get you guys back on my show, back on Night Vision Radio. Again.
We would love it.
Yeah, it's been a while, Lavendar.
Tell me when you want me on, and I'll come on.
Hey, I'm going to send you an email right now.
Okay.
Well,
all right, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All the best.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye, sweetie. Bye-bye. Well, I'm sure that is going to be a very exciting trip, and we'll be hearing more of it between now and then. And now we are going to turn it over to Anastasia with the Starseed News.
Good evening, everybody.
Hey.
Hey, hello, and it's nice to be back with you again for a fresh week. I'm really happy to be here. So I want to start out our segment tonight by thanking all those wonderful Starseed listeners that wrote to me. Bless your hearts, all of you. And I don't have time to mention everybody, so I just want to quickly thank Vania and Jada and Lisa and everybody else again for all their letters. And some of them don't mind if I share what they had to say, so I want to just take a few seconds here and share some of the words from our listeners. So I heard from Ted this week, and he wrote to me of his UFO connections and about a bump on his middle finger under the skin. Do you guys remember last week we talked about another starseed person that had a bump on their middle finger under the skin? We talked about that. So he's reporting the same thing. I'm finding that a lot of the letters that I'm getting are corroborating other people's experiences. So while a person experiences this as an individual, I'm on the blessed side of getting information and realizing that, hey, all you guys are not alone, and there seems to be patterns unfolding here to me. So doing this show and doing this report is a real privilege because I'm able to get the bigger picture. But anyway, back to Ted. He has had the most amazing 1111 experiences, and I need to get his permission to share it with you, but I don't have that tonight. But I just want to thank him very much for all that wonderful information and that lovely letter that he wrote me. And from Flo, bless her heart, she offered these insights. And I'm sharing it with you because I think it's really profound. She starts out by saying, and I have her permission, by the way. She starts out by saying that I listened to the radio show and really liked the news that you shared. Anastasia was a nice compliment to Ground Lavendar's information regarding Atlantis. I agree with your commentary regarding CERN. God is not a particle, but a wave. I don't trust any particle to give me the big picture. It's only a fractal, and depending on who is speaking through that fractal, it could be very deceptive and cut off from the wave. She says, it is Frankenscience, sanctioned by the ivory towers of linear mind. And here's the really beautiful part. She says, Lavendar pokes fun at herself about being a farm girl on a tractor from Oklahoma. Having worked most of my life in these towers, I know the mental retardation that takes place from the top down to manipulate the masses, calling snake oil science. The higher one climbs in these towers, the more one is educated out of their own gnosis. So a farm girl in Oklahoma who is connected to the ley lines of Mother Earth is the same reason why Jesus picked the fishermen as opposed to the educated elite of his time. And I'm going to clap at that because I just think that's profound. Thank you so much, Flo. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, it's just so right on. And I just was really, really appreciative of those very wise and insightful words. Now, let's see here. We have one more that I want to cover quickly because we are going to be short on time if I don't hurry. And this has permission to be shared. This is from Janice, who wrote to Lavendar, and it was forwarded to me to share on the radio. So I hope that I can sort of put this in my own words and work quickly through it so that you all understand it. So let me just start out by saying, it says, "Dear Lavendar, I only just met you last week through a YouTube video." And she says, "What caught me off guard was that I literally just finished reading Edgar Cayce's books on Atlantis, and then I find the archives on Atlantis." Now, she went to read our radio listen to our radio archives, and then she read the book on Atlantis, and it's all connected. And she said, "This sent me crying for hours as the memories came flooding back. What is the chance of this happening after only just hearing about you hours before?" Then the next wave hit, the story of Egypt. Another flood of tears when you mentioned the words that were uttered to you, "You came back." I once had a meditation in which I am placed in the Queen's chamber, and as the lid is about to be closed, I hear myself utter, "Oh, they're closing the lid." My mind left me at that point as I could not comprehend the magnitude of this event in a supposed meditation. The next strange occurrence is the lightning stories. I love lightning, and 2 years ago around the Great Lakes, we experienced several severe lightning storms. One was while we were camping at Lake Erie. Everybody was driving away from the lake and the storm, and I was driving towards it. Then she says that she raced toward the water with the knowing that she was safe, in spite of the fact that lightning was coming down all around. She said it was a once-in-a-lifetime event to experience raw power. She said she was crying with excitement and watched the lightning dance across the vast lake and sky and felt honored to witness such glory. And she goes on to talk about her affinity with street lamps, how they go on and off when she's around. And she says she plays with them. And if they're off, she turns them on and vice versa. So here is a lady that had so many strong connections to the whole starseed message. And I want to end this segment about her by saying, reading what she had to say to conclude her email. She said, "Another strange happening to me was when I was north in the woods by myself, and I mean by myself. And it was March, and the roads were snowed in. I was meditating on a dock, and butterflies appeared all around me." Now, remember, this was March, and I'm in the north with snow and ice all around. And then she reports one last strange happening. She said she was fasting and was hungry. She said, "The next strange happening was because I was fasting and was hungry, and a loaf of bread fell out of the sky into the water beside me. I had to fish it out to see if it was real. None was around me at the time, and I was alone for miles and miles."
Wow.
Isn't that something? Her story about this bread reminds me of a friend of mine who had a very, very, very little money, and she had four small children. And she'd been pouring milk out of the same gallon jug every morning for over 2 weeks. And finally, when she realized it ought to be empty, it dried up. So I've heard other stories like that, but this was a friend of mine. And it brings to mind, you know that cute saying, cats rule and dogs drool? Remember that? In this case, I say, metaphysically speaking, consciousness rules and doubt drools. So all of this is connected to one's consciousness. I really feel that. These wonderful manifestations that come when we are in a blissful state and prepared. So anyway, I want to thank very much, Janice for sending us that wonderful email. So that's all for our emails for this week, and I guess we better get on to our news or we're going to run out of time. So anyway, we have some exciting things to talk about tonight, and the first story that I want to talk about, this is all about pyramids, power, crystals, and zero-point energy. And so the first story tonight broke into the public view last year in May. But I'm bringing it up tonight for several reasons, just connected to the theme. So hang in there with me. It's all fascinating stuff. Okay, so this came from the Palestinian Telegraph. It's a Palestinian newspaper. And the headline reads, Strange Signs Found at Egypt's Pyramid of Giza. Well, what happened here is they found hieroglyphs in one of those little teeny tiny shafts. You know, the ones that you can't get into? And so here's the gist of the article. It says that the markings, which have lain unseen for 4,500 years, were filmed using a bendy camera small enough to fit through a hole in a stone door at the end of a narrow tunnel. It was hoped that they could shed light on why the tiny chamber in the tunnel, one of several mysterious passages that leads from the larger king's and queen's chambers, were originally built. The markings take the form of hieroglyphic symbols, and they're written in red paint. And there's also lines in the stone that have been made by masons. They figure, they're not sure, when the chamber was being built. Now, this article is sort of padded with the traditional Egyptology spiel, you know, so you have to kind of read between the lines. And we're going to get to that here in a minute. I have some interesting points to make that's between the lines. But let me just read the rest of it to you. The article goes on to say that Peter Dermanwelian, who from the Philip J. King Professor of Egyptology at Harvard, he says the big question is the purpose of these tunnels. They haven't figured it out yet, of course. He said there are architectural explanations, symbolic explanations, religious explanations, even ones relating to the alignment of the stars. But the final word on them is yet to be written. The challenge to discovering this is that no human can fit inside these channels, so the only way to do this exploration is with robots. So they published their findings. They published the pictures of the hieroglyphics that they found. And what's interesting about this is they named the little robot that they sent up into the channel, and they named the robot Jedi, DeJedi, D-J-E-D-I. And they named it after the magician who they claim the pharaoh Khufu consulted when planning the layout of the Great Pyramid. Now, that's the Egyptologist's version of that. But that's very interesting, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. But now the camera also scrutinized two copper pins that were embedded in the door to the chamber at the end of the tunnel. Now, copper pins, just think about that for a second. Now, while people have been wondering what the purpose of these pins is for over 20 years, I mean, it's been suggested that they're ornamental or they're handles or even parts of an electrical power plant. Well, I say they're getting warm on that one. But the Egyptologists say, well, we now know that these pins are small, beautifully made loops, indicating that they were more likely ornamental rather than electrical connections or structural features. Now, let's just think about that for a minute. They're calling them ornamental, and they're in a shaft where nobody can get to and nobody can see except by a remote control camera. You know, if they could only hear themselves, and they do this all the time. It's just, it's blind, blind, blind. Well, all we have to do is think for a moment how copper conducts electricity. And one of these days, I'm going to talk to our Starseed audience about Malin Loomis, who was the real inventor of wireless radio. And there's a fascinating story about that with copper, UFOs, connections to spirit. I've got a wonderful story to talk about. We need a whole program for that. But anyway, Malin Loomis utilized copper as a connecting point, of course, for the first wireless transmissions, which now, incidentally, I better not get into that. We don't have time. We'll talk about that another time. But let's go back to the name of the robot. Very interesting that they call it Jedi. Now, we only need to recall George Lucas and the Star Wars movies to recognize the not-at-all-subtle symbolism in that name. And, you know, everything around us is symbolic, and these people sort of give themselves away unwittingly, but they can't help themselves but kind of put it out there. So from the connection from the night magicians in Star Wars to the manipulation of the Force with the Egyptians called Maat to the destruction of the evil Death Star, these are hints to what they might really be looking for, and perhaps the ability to manipulate the power of the universe, perhaps. From inside a pyramid, they might privately know, even though they publicly don't admit, that they know was never a tomb. So Jedi indeed, that's what I have to say. So the fact is, for everybody listening to this show, I'm here to assure you that it isn't just starseeds and hidden history buffs who are very interested in the pyramids. Governments have been very, very interested for a long time. And are governments interested, I might ask you, in the acquisition of power? Well, you answer that, and then you just need to follow the trail. And that takes us to our next segment. If you Google on your computer, if you Google Area 51 Pyramid, you're going to find some intriguing information about satellite imagery of what is purported to be in Area 51. Now, I say purported because, you know, we have to be cautious. Nevertheless, the story I'm about to relay to you is sufficient for all of us to get a handle on it and think about it heavily. So I'm attempting to be objective here, but my own bias will come through in a moment. Anyway, there is a Google satellite image with an address on the image that it says unnamed road in Nevada. That's how it's given. But there's also coordinates, which I didn't have time to check out. But anyway, then there's also a Terra server shot that I wanted to refer you to for this program, but that photo has since been removed from the Internet. So that's no surprise. But when viewed from space, now there appears to be a flat-topped, the capstone is missing, tetrahedral, which is three-sided, pyramid structure right out there in the desert, surrounded by other large buildings, you know, the typical kind of warehouse buildings, and very interesting image-evoking ground scars. So if we assume that this satellite photo is accurate, what is the government doing building a pyramid? Do you guys think that it's a resting place for pharaoh presidents?
No,
you don't think so? So, you know, I mean, really. So considering the secret interest in pyramids by numerous governments, and not the least of which is our very own, we all need to have a heads up on what's up with that. You know, what are they doing out there? So Area 51 was brought into the limelight, as you probably all know, by Las Vegas journalist George Knapp. And it's been the center of UFO speculation for a long, long time, along with speculations about the likelihood of the top secret base being used to reverse engineer captured alien technology. And if that's true, and there is circumstantial evidence that at least some of the allegations that Area 51 has been a testing facility for this out-of-world technology, then some of that astonishing technology may require an unusual type of charge to power non-human ET-influenced devices, which takes us back to the pyramid. And there are Chinese scientists that have recently marshaled a team that have been studying the great, and I can't say this, guys, Xiayang, I'm sorry, Xiayang pyramid that sits near Mount Baigong, I think I've got that, and it's in the western province of China. Now, this is a huge pyramid with a flat top on it. Now, bear in mind, the pyramid at Area 51 has the capstone missing. It has a flat top. So back to China anyway. Now, some are reporting that these scientists are looking for signs of energetic activation at this pyramid. Now, on the Internet, you'll find that there are numerous reports of pyramids activating all over the planet. But anyway, the Chinese think that their big flat-top pyramid was used thousands of years ago as a landing pad to recharge the power supply of alien ships. So not every nation is as buttoned down about UFOs as our own. Now, what we need to ask is, are the Chinese onto something? For if that pyramid is truly erected or was erected to power up extraterrestrial spacecraft, then our very own Air Force may be looking to build something similar in their project to reverse engineer off-planet technology. Now, that's one of the things we need to be thinking about. We could ask, has the government developed alien technology to the stage where they need a massive alien-designed power base? This is all about pyramids. Now, from a more earthly perspective, one article I read suggests that this could be a radar array device, you know, an experimentation with longitudinal waves, or even some kind of coordinating gizmo thing that links up to HARP or maybe IceCat, and that's the equivalent, the European equivalent to HARP. It's located in Norway. Anyway, nobody knows what it's for or why it's there or even if it's absolutely for certain located at Area 51. But you all need to check it out on the net, and if any of you find out anything new, be sure to let us know. I want to hear about it. But I'll tell you what, these days, nothing going on out there is going to surprise me. So that's just really interesting stuff. Okay. So, but I never said it wouldn't excite me, okay? It might not surprise me, but I didn't say it wouldn't excite me. So we got a BBC report that gives us some very exciting news from Egypt. So So we're back to Egypt, and this is cool stuff, you guys. In the quintessential land of pyramids, they discovered brand new pyramids buried under sand and silt using infrared technology. Man, you guys, this technology is amazing. I mean, we all got to wake up to this, you know. We can't just stay numb. Oh, that's cool. This is just standard. Everybody's got to start recognizing what is going on in our world. The technology, where is this stuff coming from? It's not just naturally evolved, I'm telling you. Anyway, back to the pyramids. They found 17 of them, in fact, and along with 1,000 more tombs and several thousand settlements, some near the city of Tanis. Now, the excavation of the sites is pioneered for, you know, just official information, at the University of Alabama at Birmingham by U.S. Egyptologist Dr. Sarah Parsak. Now, to find the sites, they analyzed images from satellites orbiting 700 kilometers above the Earth that were equipped with cameras so powerful, here we go again, that they can pinpoint objects less than 1 meter in diameter on the Earth's surface. And science, once again, is about to discover things that existed all along, but it never knew existed. So when people want to spout science, you know, as a rebuttal to metaphysics, I say just hold on to your hats, because science is in the very infantile stages of development in our 3D arena. So were you going to say something, Ariel?
No, I was just giggling over what you said.
Okay. Well, and now we got some other problems going on with pyramids. So while we're discovering new ones, you guys know there's a movement to tear them down. Now, this is just a contrast with the polarities on our planet and how things are going. And let me just tell you what's happening. According to several reports in the Arabic media, prominent Muslim clerics have begun to call for the demolition of Egypt's great pyramids, or in the words of Saudi Sheikh al-Bin Said al-Rabi, they are symbols of paganism, and they have to be brought down. Now, the Arabian tribesmen associated with this fundamentalist movement, I guess, are descended or connected to an ancestor that conquered Egypt a long time ago. Anyway, the ancient Egyptian history is one of tearing down their antiquities because they considered these relics to be made by infidels. So now, you know, they never could tear down the pyramids before. They could tear down other things, knock off the heads of this statue or that statue or deface the Sphinx or whatever. But now we have the ability, because of technology, to destroy the pyramids. And so this is a very, very real movement in the Middle East to do this. And the only question left is whether international institutions are now going to notice that the Great Pyramids need to be, you know, they're next on the radical religions hit list. So, you see, as we live, we are witnessing the polarity struggle mounting. There's just a fierce fight on all sides. And sometimes it looks like there's just this immense beast about to pounce on the innocence of the world and on knowledge and truth and the things that we're finding and the good things we can do with what we're discovering. But as in all good tales of old, you guys, the up spiral has already won. And in the meantime, authentic starseed, we're all making sure that it does. And that's what we need to keep in mind. So we're all working with the divine feminine energies. And that's where I want to get into our DNA story for tonight, because we're talking about the great matriarch, although this story is a reflection of the dark masculine at work, because the way I see the dark side of the masculine is one of inappropriate creation. And so this just took me away. And some of you may have already heard about it, but stem cell scientists are now setting their sights on the extinct woolly mammoth, after global warming thawed Siberia's permafrost and uncovered remains of this animal. Now, this is an international attempt here. There are a lot of countries involved in this, and they are really heck-bent on getting it done. Russian and South Korean scientists, they've signed a deal on joint research intended to recreate a woolly mammoth, which last walked the Earth some 10,000 years ago. The South Korean Foundation, Soam Biotech Research Foundation, said it would transfer technology to a Russian university, which has already been involved in joint research with Japanese scientists to bring the mammoth back to life. To top that off, China's gotten into the works. Beijing Genomics Institute is also going to take part in the venture. So these countries all over the world are trying to recreate a woolly mammoth. And they have to say this. They said the first and hardest mission is to restore the mammoth cells. And by replacing the nuclei of egg cells from an elephant with those taken from the mammoth somatic cells, embryos with mammoth DNA could be produced and planted into elephant wombs for delivery. And they're working on that. Now, South Korean experts have previously cloned animals, including a cow, a cat, dogs, a pig, and a wolf. And last October, I guess another Korean, either I don't know if he's Korean or Chinese man, unveiled eight cloned coyotes in a project sponsored by a provisional government. So governments are funding cloning. So anyway, this is where we're going with science.
Yeah, well, that's where they're going, and
Well, we're
I'm
working
listening.
The opposite end of the
yeah.
of the energetic spectrum, which is about, you know, there is really no difference. They just don't understand this between metaphysics and physical reality, as they are trying to find God in their physical experimentation and so on. We are already connected with the source, working with the energy on the other side, holding all of this avalanche of potential disaster at bay. And it's just important that we all connect to what we know, who we are, and do our work, because it's just the reason I bring up these stories is for Starseed to understand how critical it is that we all be who we're born to be and that we do our work. And that's what it's all about, because if you don't know why you're doing it, really why you're doing it, and what you stand for, then it could be easy to get lazy and to say, well, it's just about me. Well, it's not just about one person. It's not just about us. It's about the planet. And that's why we're here. And that's why we have Starseed Radio Academy. And that's why we're gathering forces. And so that takes us into our next story, which is...
I'm afraid we're not going to have time for it, Anastasia.
We're not, are we?
You know, I'm watching... Because I know how much time we're going to need for our...
We're not.
Our other segments, but you know what? We can pick that up, and it'll be the lead story for the next show.
Next week, we will talk about space-time crystals, because that is just so much in line with Lavendar and with the Giza crystals. I was hoping to bring that up with the pyramids. I'm so sorry, but anyway, we'll take it up next week, and we can correlate all that together. You all can figure that out, how it's connected to pyramid energy. Okay?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know what? The tapestry is huge. And all the threads are connected. And
yes, they are.
I just want to make sure that I leave time for callers with some questions, and we have some files, some recordings that I want to get going with, and it's going to take some time. So next week we'll hear about space-time crystals on the Starseed News with Anastasia.
And thanks, everybody.
Yes, and thank you to everyone who's writing in. So now we have a very... powerful is almost not even the right word, bit of information that Lavendar has brought out of the vault, and you might need to listen to it more than once, but this is really the keys that you need. So, without further ado, the key codes to empowerment of starseeds.
I decided to take some more things out of the vault today. And I'm looking at the date of February 5th, 1989. And we're going to talk about key codes to starseed empowerment. There are five main ingredients to a starseed empowerment. The first is natural state. The second is rites of passage. The third is taking one's power. Four, holding the point. And five, functioning within sacred space. Empowerment activation of starseed happens when a person aligns to their natural state, which matches the core of their being. Through astrological planetary alignments, one can find a blueprint which matches this natural state. In a natal chart, there are markings and aspects which clearly shows where rites of passage present itself to the person. Rites of passage. This is a clear definition of how natural states affects one while on the earth. This reflects other levels of rites of passage regarding starseed participation. Through an astrological chart, this too can be a clear signal of ET behavior modes. Astrological timings are evident whether a person is only curious or whether they truly want to know their responsibility level concerning their participation. Taking one's power. This takes place after one acknowledges natural state and being aware of rites of passage. This creates a bridge between earth and star connections. Responsibility now has a new meaning as to the self and to others. This will also reflect intent from the core of the soul, which in turn will resonate to the core of the planet. Holding the point. Staying focused on the purpose of natural state. Honoring the action of rites of passage and maintaining the proper use of will. Then a person will be exemplified by creative, productive management of power. This is an energetic that will activate immediately. If the person's timing and synchronization is ready for the quickening. Sacred space. When natural state is aligned to the willingness of the commitment of soul, it is from this position of knowingness that enables the soul to create sacred space. When one establishes oneself spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally, psychically, environmentally, then can energies emerge to match galactic or starseed activation. So the question is, who is willing, capable, and ready to receive the starseed quickening? Now we go to February 5th, 1989, Las Vegas. However, it has been rewritten from the original draft, which is June 18th, 1989, which, of course, the sun at that time was probably 26 of Gemini. Subject, Cosmic Chess. Cosmic Chess, spin codes for decoding procedures. Number one. Violation happens at these levels. A. Manipulation. B. Control. C. Abuse. D. Judgment. And E. Punishment. 2. Whoever stops the spin is responsible for starting it up again, but higher. 3. Never play coyote within the spin, always away from it. Coyote energy polarizes itself and eats the spin from within. 4. Magnetize those things that work. Use whatever works. Keep within harmonics of action. 5. Demagnetize those things that do not serve or benefit the spin. 6. By natural state, you will attract those things that keep the spin going and manifesting. 7. When in doubt about the use of will, ask. Don't pretend to know. 8. Defer to the person that has the spin. Don't try to do someone else's job. 9. If someone else's spiritual path touches you, ask yourself, does this help or hinder the spin? If it hinders, then say, by my rite of passage, I defer. Let this cup pass my lips. If it does not help to spin, then open up the matching frequency of alignment for someone to match it. When this energy is set forth, an automatic test will come to test to see if it is attraction or alignment. Attraction cannot stay for long. The commitment ray can only stay with alignment. 10. Four bases of molecular spin. They are the truth ray, the integrity ray, transmutation ray, and resurrection ray. First, the truth ray. Knowingness extended through the eyes or physical body to extract harmonics or disharmonics of action of intended action. This ray can only operate in the now moment, for other intents of play can always change and transform truth. Intent and truth manifest instantly for those that can call upon this harmonic. Integrity ray. Knowing this extended with the truth ray, intent calls forth a harmonic of right action with a high spin of the now moment, which in turn translates to other up-and-coming moments of action or intended action. Transmutation ray, knowing this with rites of passage, in order to change one form to another. All harmonics are attuned to the high spin for all involved in the spin and outside the spin that will be affected by this process. Resurrection ray, knowingness of cycles of cosmic windows concerning death and rebirth of rites of passage. This also depends on whether the persons using this ray have their knowingness with all probable plays of such action. When these four rays are used simultaneously in molecular spin, then what one might term magic occurs. This spin executes the alchemical process, with all four spinning together with intent as the pole of action. Visualize the four directions with you standing in the middle holding the intent as the blueprint of crystalline thought projections. When the intent is clear about the outcome, no matter which way it goes, initiates the powers of manifestation in times past. This process was misused and abused by those that thought they had the right to change certain people or events. Alignment of all concern was not considered, and downfalls of people and governments happened because the intent was colored with selfish and greedy intentions. Corruption of people only transpires when the cosmic process of rites of passage concerning the original blueprint of evolutionary programs. There are degrees of magic. To use a matrix designed for immediate people or surroundings creates certain harmonics of distinct action. It is a waste to use one's powers of magic in small energy fields before commission to larger ones that encompass larger blueprints that affect larger numbers of people or events. Discernment is a must on all levels of perceptions and participation. In other words, don't bite off more than you can chew. Understand your capabilities as well as your limitations. Mastership at any level requires this kind of understanding. When using these four rays, understand that what you envision from a third dimensional point of view may not look the same from another perspective. When invoking the powers of the masters to come and assist in this process, also requires a knowingness of how the masters play from sky to earth. When you invoke the best, don't ever think that one can always see what the best is from a master's awareness. If one decides to use this molecular spin in order to bust something or someone, then be prepared for the dragon to be unleashed also in the direction of oneself. Keep things of this nature simple in the beginning, for through simplicity, understanding can take root and easiness becomes a reality. Before one sets a matrix with these four rays, establish the rites of passage, and this does not mean playing God in all matters. This has been the place where misinterpreting rears its ugly head. Also be aware of those forces that are in opposition to change, and never take for granted that their powers are lesser than yours in sacred matters. A miscalculation at this level can bring devastation to body, mind, and soul. Not many on the planet wish to take their personal power of action, much less venture into unknown realms of other realities connected to other plans such as global group mind action. Many tests of spirit will manifest for those that take this kind of power and knowledge. When the tests are over, and those above, considering all tests involved, will always let the seeder know what steps to take next in their knowingness. This is a personal time, and others cannot help you here, for they may not have all the ingredients of information that is needed in order for one to take their next step. It is also wise to consult someone that has gone through these particular tests as only a guideline, not an absolute. Wise and unwise decisions make for mastership. However, it is easier and more in alignment to choose wise decisions based on known facts, along with considerations of unknown facts. Never judge someone else's method of using the four rays. Their methods may be attuned to areas that don't match your particular methods. The end results of creative spin will always, and I mean always, render the end results. In other words, their way may not be your way. Magic occurs when harmonics are placed in proper sequence of cosmic timings. But intent always determines the outcome. Synchronization is confirmation. Let me say that again. Synchronization is confirmation. When opportunity matches timing, watch magic. See what happens. Some people actually call it luck. If you feel that your timing is off, go be alone. Connect to the four directions or the four rays of some and refer to the four faces of God. Offer up your higher self any discrepancy. Allow the knowing to pour through, then stand firm on your timing once you have it clear. Knowing comes from discernment of holographic facts, not part, but whole. When in galactic awareness, it is important to remember that, that no matter what other sends to you, either negative or positive, that it will only strengthen your light. Some spiritual lessons teach protection shields that reflect back on the sender, when in turn this creates sometimes boomerang effects that stops those magic moments. Those with envy attached to their intentions, when your light becomes too bright, well, they usually just stop sending. Manipulation is the right hand of misuse of power. It is the co-creator of control. The one who wants control will be controlled. Abuse of frequency happens when you place your energy where it is not invited to be by rites of passage. The let's fix it syndrome applies to misuse of rites of passage. Judgment. Whether you judge or whatever you judge, judges you. This is true in spiritual training. In galactic training, it automatically will stop the magic of the moment. It depletes cosmic spins faster than any energy. Judgment not only stops it, it kills it by crushing it to death. Being overshadowed by a higher being doesn't always give one permission to change timing or a fated event. Knowing this with discernment has to be present if such an assignment is at hand. Astral beings or runners do not have rites of passage to determine major moves on the cosmic chessboard. There are times when they are allowed, when testing the spirit of the person is part of the training. Many factors have to be considered in the testing process. Remember that not all are tested the same way. There are certain galactic key codes dealing with geomancy, and only those with rites of passage to the codes have the ability to read them, but most importantly have the translation to match the key codes to match this knowledge. This misinterpreting is where many lose it or get burned. Cooing others' assignments usually starts to happen at this level also. Reward and punishment concepts, when applied, reviewed, and played out through polarity, is for earthlings for lessons of spiritual distinctions. In galactic harmonics, this does not work. It stops the spin and allows for more spiritual training. I giveth, I taketh away, through reward and punishment, intent, when played in galactic programs, will backfire with such precision that many can hardly sustain the effects of the burn. Playing fair and on target means knowing and allowing, but at the same time staying magnetized to the particular molecular spin created through the four-ray process, plus the help of overshadows or galactic beings in charge of your galactic process. The time to let go of a spin is when you know it is going to intentionally damage the outcome of the intended spin. Then you let it go. If, on the other hand, you are very close to completion and it becomes just a matter of being disappointed or physically too tired to continue, then reconsider. Take time out, but hold the spin in thought. Defer, if need be, to another, and resume your spin when all again is balanced. If others, such as walk-ins or light workers, start demanding your time, as in networking, and it interferes with the spin, simply send a balancing beam so that their needs can be met by someone else. You can even do this through the eyes or through a handshake. You may utter silently or out loud, "By my divine rite of passage," send a key code phrase that you know applies to their awareness level, then just simply pass it on. This next statement might be misinterpreted by some, but could be applauded by others. Here it is. Learn to share power, but never give it up when holding key codes to the four-way spin. Defer only to someone of equal status or better. Never, and I mean never, yield to a lesser power. And this is signed by Selene, the Moon Goddess, rewritten from the original draft of February 5th, 1989 to June 18th, 1989.
Well, Lavendar, I want to thank you so much for sharing that at a time when so many people need to have that. And I know that I had to listen to it a few times myself to really grasp, because those are some pretty high concepts. But for you to have had to hold that until proper timing shows the level of discernment that you carry and the responsibility that you take so seriously in releasing at the proper time stuff from the vault. So thank you, Lavendar.
You're welcome. I think we should probably get on with our guests now.
Yes, we have enough time. We're going to now hear a pre-recorded interview with Robert Stemmen, British investigative journalist.
Thank you, Arielle. And today we have with us Roy Stemmen, who was very, very kind enough to send me a book and also to be in England today to talk to us. So welcome, Roy.
Thank you.
I really have been looking through the book that you have written called The Big Book of Reincarnation, examining the evidence that we all have lived before. And I can tell you for certain that I have lived before many, many times, and that mm-hmm. I have researched this through the years and have been very, very comfortable in knowing about several of my past lives. And I researched it and have really been in favor of people coming forth talking about their past lives and even future lives in my work. And so I have been really a person that years ago decided to pull up my sleeves and prove it, and I did. And I did notice that in your book that you talked about Henry Mancini, and
mm-hmm.
And he actually came to me with his son, and his son said that he was the reincarnation of George Patton. And he was 9 years old at the time, and we put him under hypnosis. And sure enough, we had a pretty strong case for that. So I just wanted to bring that up to you.
That's
so
a fantastic story. Thanks,
yeah,
Sue.
Yeah, I noticed that you had Henry Mancini here in your book.
Yeah.
Also, to let you know what happened last week, I had a lady, a client, that said that she remembered being born and
mm-hmm.
that she was about 4 or 5 years old when she instructed her parents to take a certain road and drive down a certain street and stop in front of a certain house. And
uh-huh.
they said, what do you want to do? She said, I need to go in and tell my parents that, you know, that they don't need to cry and suffer anymore, that I am now in a new body.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they did not allow the child to get out of the car. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that just happened last week. So, enough about me talking now. Let's talk about you and what made you start researching reincarnation?
Well, it goes back to my teenage years when I began writing for a spiritualist newspaper, a weekly newspaper called Psychic News. And I spent, in fact, almost 10 years associated with that publication during that time, and I happen still to be chairman of that publication today. So I'm very involved in spiritualism and mediumship, and satisfied myself at a very early age because I had such good evidence through mediums that people that I had known and had died had survived death and were able to communicate with me. So that was all good news and was a very good start in life at a very early age for me. But very soon the question of reincarnation came up, and in spiritualism I soon discovered that there were many people who do not accept reincarnation. Their view of the afterlife is one where when we die, we're reunited with our loved ones and we live happily ever after in that next world. So a very similar concept to heaven, the Christian heaven, really. But there were also spirit guides who proclaimed reincarnation as being a very important part of our spiritual evolution. But some spirit guides also said they didn't accept reincarnation. So it was a very, I got mixed messages, as any spiritualist does, on the subject, and decided the only way to make up my mind as to which of those two opposing views was correct was to look at the evidence, which, you know, we need to do in all aspects of the paranormal. And so I set about reading as much as I could and meeting people that had experiences. And that's gone over four decades. And the big book of reincarnation is the result of that. It brings everything together and discusses the varying opinions and the evidence that exists, and really leaves it to the reader to make up his or her own mind. But I make it clear that I think the evidence is extremely strong with the very best of cases.
I look to see how thick this book is, and this is really a labor of love. This has taken you, what, 40 years to write? Is that what you're saying?
The research and the material that's in there, I've collected over the years. I mean, a lot of the research has been carried out by other researchers who, including Professor Ian Stevenson, who was a psychiatrist at the University of Virginia, and he spent also 40-odd years traveling the world and interviewing students and young people who had past life memories. And his work, I've dedicated my book to him because his work is by far the best that there is in terms of just the amount of evidence. He investigated 3,000 cases in many different cultures. And, you know, we find there are similarities across those cultures. So the book is very much the result of interviewing people like Professor Stevenson, who I met on three occasions, other researchers that are working in the field, reading their papers in scientific journals. I realized at an early stage that a lot of what they discovered in their research ended up in rather dry scientific journals and didn't really get out to the public at large. So the purpose of the book, as much as anything else, is to say to people, you know, if you haven't made up your mind about reincarnation, you probably will be quite surprised to see how much very strong evidence exists that just doesn't get into the public domain and you know, my job is to make you aware of that, and it's your job then to decide on the implications and how it might affect your outlook on life.
Yeah. I noticed that on page 86 of your book, do you have the book there? Can you open it up to page 86? Do you have the book?
I can. I've got it right here. Yes.
Okay. What Ian Stevenson talks about, he highlights unusual forms of behavior. Can you go over the list there about some of the things that happen for children's desire to maybe eat different foods? Can you go over that for us a little bit?
Sure. Well, Stevenson discovered a variety of similarities in the cases. He died about 5 years ago, I think, but his work is continuing at the University of Virginia and is in the safe hands of Dr. Jim Tucker. And Tucker has come up with a strength of case scale. So it's a way, it's designed to assess how evidential cases of reincarnation are. And it's a very useful tool, really, because it enables researchers to tick the boxes, if you like, as they assess just how good a case is. But for the layman, it's incredibly useful to show all the different influences that manifest in children. These are spontaneous cases, and usually involve children who remember past lives from the moment they can speak, they start talking about them. And these influences that they bring with them, if you like, from a past life include unusual dietary cravings or avoidances. In other words, they demand foods of their new family that they were used to having in their past life, or they reject the food they're being given now because it doesn't match up to what they were used to. Some of them display unusual methods of eating or table manners because they are behaving exactly as they did in their previous existence, and it might have been either in a different culture or even in, particularly in cases like India, in a different caste where the behavior and table manners would be very different. And this is a surprising one on his list, unusual use of intoxicants. So you can imagine that you know, a child that's remembering being an alcoholic in his past life, maybe even dying that way, may well be born with a desire, or if he sees adults drinking, wanting to reacquaint himself with that experience. Unusual fears and phobias are particularly important, I think, and we find this in lots of cases. I know so many people that have phobias, and they don't know why. Most of us don't know why we have a phobia. It could have an explanation of something that we experienced in childhood in this life, but Stevenson has shown that quite often these phobias are associated with memories that have come over from a past life. Other things on the list include unusual animosities, unusual skills or aptitudes that the child just has without being taught them, behavior related to that of the opposite sex. That could mean being quite overtly sexual at a young age because he or she is still remembering an adult life in their past life. But some of them also recall being in the previous life of a different sex, so boys remembering being girls and vice versa. And Stevenson has pointed out that this could be an explanation, not the only explanation, but it could be one explanation of why some people say that they feel they have been born into the wrong body, and that mentally, emotionally, they are not the same sex as the body in which they find themselves. Now, most people that say that don't, as far as I know, do not think in terms of any past life influence. And Stevenson never used hypnosis to explore those cases, but he does say that it could well be that they are remembering a past life and have brought that sexuality with them. And finally, a desire or reluctance to return to a previous family or place. And I was struck by the story, Lavender, that you mentioned at the beginning of the little girl in the car that wanted to stop and go into the house and talk to the family there. And what interested me was that her family in this life didn't allow her to do that. In some cultures, that would be, if not encouraged, it would at least be discussed. And I think in the East, the parents are far more sympathetic to children having those sort of memories and helping them come to terms with them. Though maybe not letting the child go to the house could be a good thing, because I know from experience of reading and visiting the Druze people in the Lebanon, where they believe strongly in reincarnation, that often families get together, a past life, a child remembering a past life, will eventually find the parents that he had in the past life, and very complex and intricate relationships develop out of that. And I think it's not always in everyone's interest. It probably is as far as the child is concerned, but then you end up with the parents of in the past life and the present life both feeling slightly alienated because the child's affection is divided between the two. And lastly, on the list of the strength of case scale are memories of previous life expressed in play. So often Stevenson found that the parents that he interviewed in this life would say that the child always wanted to play at being a shopkeeper, and then the memory of the past life was that he was in fact a shopkeeper. So those are their indications. They're not proof of themselves, but they're very, very clear indications that memories may well be carried over from one life to the next.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you've said. And I'm just looking at page 87 right across from it, and it says, "When I was famous," chapter 9. So I notice in this first, on this chapter, you talk about Nicholas II of Russia, and that you actually met him in 1998 as Donald Norsik. Can you tell us about that story?
Yes, it's a fascinating story. Donald Norsik wrote a book about it. I was visiting the United States at the time, so I was able to meet him in Chicago. He was a man whose appearance was very similar to Nicholas II in terms of having a beard. He was quite a short man, and he was very sincere in his belief that he had been Tsar Nicholas II, and had, of course, he and his family had been murdered by the Russians. And it brought to an end the monarchy in Russia, of course. Now, his case is unusual in that he wasn't born with any memories of being Nicholas II, and he got well into adulthood before he went to the cinema one day to see Dr. Zhivago, just thinking it would be a lovely romantic story. And the moment he saw the Tsar and Tsarina depicted on the screen, he immediately identified with them, and then ultimately he began to have more memories. The problem, of course, with all these cases of individuals claiming to remember being a celebrity is that they can't really tell us anything that is not already in the history books. And if they tell us something that isn't recorded in history, we then have no way of checking it anyway. So we sort of go around in circles in trying to satisfy ourselves about these cases. And in fact, I don't think we can. I'm happy to let Donald Norsick's case stand and people judge for themselves. It's believing that he was Tsar Nicholas II, I don't think has been an easy thing for him to do. He was working in the advertising industry. I'm sure publishing his book about those memories probably brought him as much scorn and criticism as it did any sort of followers. But he did tell me that after the book was published, a number of people that had also had memories of being reincarnated at the same period had come forward and made contact with him. And he also was able to make contact with the Anastasia, the lady who claimed to be Anastasia. Though DNA testing since then rather suggests that her claimed memory of being Anastasia and having escaped when the rest of her family were murdered was perhaps not a reality. But a fascinating case nonetheless.
Yes, I'm looking at some of your pages in here of famous people. And of course, I can't tell you how many Marie Antoinettes that have come across my path. There's certain people that seem to think that they were her. Same thing with Nefertiti and with Cleopatra and with there are several throughout history. And what I've come to kind of recognize is that perhaps they have the soul memory, or maybe it's the bloodline and the DNA activation. You know, see, all these people cannot be the one, you know, as I know that you agree with me on that, you know, everyone can't be that one. So what have you found with similar expressions of reincarnation? Have you run across several that say, you know, the same thing?
Yes, I have. I don't have a problem with... Sort of coming to terms with them, because I think inevitably there are people who may be living quite boring lives in this existence, and by claiming to be somebody famous from a past life, they bring a bit of color into their life, whether they subconsciously or deliberately. I don't know. But you're absolutely right. They cannot all be the same person, as far as I'm concerned. If one was being really sympathetic about those cases, one could argue, as you've suggested, that there may be some DNA line that would explain it. It could be that they are part of a group soul, and an aspect of that group soul was Cleopatra or Marie Antoinette or whoever, and the memory they are having is because they are part of that group soul. But I think the reality is we know an awful lot these days about false memories, and I guess these are just false memories. It's as simple as that. And false memories is something with reincarnation research we do have to be very, very cautious about, because as I explain in the book, there are two types of cases that we can look at. One is the spontaneous cases with children that I've already mentioned, and then there are the acquired memories, if you like, that the adult doesn't have until going under hypnosis and then having this experience. The problem is, by that time, they will have been amount of information from novels and books and magazines and newspapers, etc. And the mind has this enormous capacity to remember pretty well everything that it learns and acquires. Even though at a conscious level we forget most of it, but it's there buried in the subconscious. And the mind has the capability of weaving much of that material into what would appear to be very realistic past life memories. But some of these have been investigated in some way, in some detail, and are found to be false. And so, you know, one cannot always take at face value anyone's claim to have a past life memory of somebody famous or even somebody not famous. We just have to analyze it as best we can. But with children, the evidence is so much stronger because they start talking about a past life from the age of two or three, and they talk about things that the family never heard of, names of husbands and wives and children in that past life. And when these cases are investigated, usually they're found to be totally accurate. So the skeptic has the problem then. He can't say it's something they've been exposed to in books and reading. That information has to come from somewhere, and a past life would appear to be the best explanation.
I'm looking at page 91 where it says Marilyn Monroe. Can you give us a little synopsis of that paragraph that you wrote about Marilyn Monroe being reincarnated as a Scottish singer?
I can. And here again, she's not the only person that I have in my files who claims to have been to be the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe. But here again, this is Sherry Lee Laird is the singer who actually was, she had a number one hit record pretty well around the globe, I think. It was called No Ordinary Love. It was certainly a hit in Canada and Europe, but it was here in the UK. And she says that she had had flashbacks to life as Marilyn and often became suicidal herself at the same age as when Marilyn took her own life. Now, she was introduced somehow to a psychiatrist and past life regressionist, Dr. Adrian Finkelstein, and he hypnotized her, and they had numerous sessions together in which she talked about Marilyn's life and what it felt like to back in those years up to her death in 1962. And that was all published in a book called Marilyn Monroe Returns, The Healing of a Soul. Now, Finkelstein's role as a past life regressionist is to help people overcome problems that either have their origin in this life or in a past life. And in Sherry Lee Laird's case, she had the suicidal tendencies and other problems that were attributed under hypnosis to a carryover from Marilyn Monroe's life, if you like. And she gave lots of interesting information, but once again, the same criticism I make of the Tsar Nicholas II Donald Norsik case is that so much has been written about Marilyn Monroe. That's not to say that Sherry Lee Laird isn't the reincarnation of Marilyn, but everything that she said under hypnosis could be explained, I think, by having an interest in Marilyn and having read up pretty well on it. I'm not aware of any new information coming out in that book that she and Finkelstein produced that couldn't have been in the public domain beforehand. But, you know, it's probably unfair to dismiss it on that basis. She could well be the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe. After all, if we accept a reincarnation, then celebrities are going to be reborn as well. So we should be open to their that possibility.
Well, you know, the proof's in the pudding in some cases. And I noticed that when on the next page, on page 90, you talk about Michelangelo. And I did happen to meet Paul Felix Montez. And I saw his work of his statues and large horses at Caesar's Palace. And there's no doubt about that he very well could have been Michelangelo. I mean, that was just so evident in his work. And, of course, he works on a lot of famous, he's a famous movie set designer, and I think he even has extreme memories, isn't that right? Haven't you talked to him?
I've not talked to him, no. I've read his case. I've seen photographs of the sculptures that he's produced.
Yeah.
And here's a case. That this is somebody who's not leading a boring life in this existence. He's got a very colorful life, and he's clearly very, very talented. He probably comes in for a lot of skepticism from claiming that he is the reincarnation of Michelangelo, but... that doesn't seem to worry him too much, and why should it? So, but he's not the only artist that is around who claims to be famous. So, the only problem I find with some of these cases is that, and Paul Gauguin is also mentioned on the same page that I mentioned.
Yes.
There's a man called Peter Tiekamp, who's a Dutch artist. But I also know a Brazilian medium who produces wonderful paintings while in trance, and Gauguin is supposed to be one of the people that controls his hands and produces those paintings. I've written about him on my website, on my blog, paranormalreview.com. So, you know, Gauguin can't be doing that and also be reincarnated as Peter Tiekamp. So, these sort of cases just demonstrate how we shouldn't be dismissive, but we shouldn't be too accepting of claims without, you know, good evidence.
Right. I want to read this one name and this one paragraph. Lyman Trumbull, the name of this U.S. senator from Illinois, will not be recognized by most Americans, but then he did serve during the American Civil War and died over 100 years ago in 1896. He is particularly remembered as the co-author of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution that prohibited all kinds of slavery. In his current incarnation, his political actions will certainly make a much greater impact on the pages of history, for according to Walter Simkow, whose research methods I discuss in Chapter 11, he is now better known as Barack Hussein Obama II, the 44th President of the United States. Can you give us a little bit more insight to how you came across this information?
Well, This is a very controversial area of reincarnation research, because Walter Simkow, who I've met and discussed his methods, we were both attending a conference in Holland at the time. He uses a medium or a psychic that Shirley MacLaine uses quite often, and that person channels a spiritual being who gives information to Walter about who he says individuals that are well known in this life were in their past life, and then Walter goes off and does his own research. Sometimes Walter comes to this to a conclusion and checks it out with this medium. But between them, they come to a decision, and then Walter starts checking out and finding images of the person. And the thing that is quite surprising is that in a lot of these cases, the individual is concerned, and that includes Lyman Trumbull and Barack Obama, do have quite strong facial resemblances. It's Walter Simkow's contention that we not only bring memories from one life to the next, but that we also are likely to appear very similar in appearance. That is difficult to accept, I have to say, for most people, because we are, after all, the product of our parents' genes. And that should really override any other appearance. And a lot of us, I think, probably would, if we're not happy with how we look in this life, might hope we look a little better in our next life. But as far as he is concerned, the medium, by the way, was Kevin Ryerson, as a name that will be familiar, I'm sure, with many of your listeners. The difficulty I have with this evidence is that we have no way of knowing whether the people that are named have any feelings that this is correct. There's only one case that I'm aware of where Walter Simcoe has found somebody that is totally accepting of the identification of who he was in a past life. But at the same time, it's a fascinating area of research, but I don't think it's as strong as the cases of spontaneous reincarnation recall amongst young children. So, but it's an area that we can't ignore. The other problem I have with it is it almost inevitably involves celebrities again. So, just because their pictures are readily available, both from their previous existence and this existence, and it does strike me as a little odd that everybody that is famous in this life appeared to be pretty famous in their past life as well.
Yes, I was looking through your list of, you have a chapter called Celebrity Believers, and Glenn Ford, Henry Ford, Benjamin Franklin, Lynn Franks, Yuri Geller, Robert Graves, Victor Hugo, David Lloyd George, Loretta Lynn, of course, Shirley MacLaine, Norman Mailer, Henry Mancini, George Patton, Helen Reddy, Steven Seagal, Martin Sheen, Jerry Springer, I didn't know about him, Sylvester Stallone, Loretta Swift, Mark Twain, Richard Wagner, Diana Princess of Wales, Charles Prince of Wales, Walt Whitman, Montel Williams. All these people are in your book, and they're professing that they have some recognition of having lived before. And yeah. I think, you know, I have been around the movie industry off and on all my life, and have traveled with a lot of high-profile people. And I have noticed that some of the people that have these roles that they play in movies, sometimes they are drawn to these movies because they've actually had those kinds of lives.
Mm-hmm. That could well be. In fact, there's a very interesting development in the research involving people that could remember being in the Civil War. There was a researcher called Barbara Lane who wondered why so many people like to reenact the Civil War. I'm talking about people that go off at weekends and look the part and carry the weapons and do mock fights because they like to relive that period. And she wondered whether that was the inspiration for that was that they were subconsciously tuning into past lives in that period. And she found 12 of them who were willing to be regressed. One of them was a woman, but the other were male. And every one of them remembered a past life in the Civil War period. It wouldn't surprise me that some actors, if they're shown a script relating to something that they did in a past life, would feel particularly drawn to that that period.
Right. You know, I have kind of a feeling about some of the reincarnation families of the Civil War. I'm kind of guessing that a lot of them now are, you know, born in the time of the baby boomers, and they seem to be putting together something called the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
that's just kind of a thing I've been tracking recently. Let's see, what else is in your book that looks so interesting? Let's see, how about telling us a story about someone that you have personally talked to and that you really have a deep feeling of knowing that this particular story is probably the truest story that you know about?
Well, I think the one I've been most closely associated with, just because it's here in England, involves a lady called Jenny Cacall. She's born in England, But from quite an early age, she had memories of a place where she felt she had lived before, and she eventually decided it was in Ireland, and she got some maps, and she identified a place called Malahide, and she drew a drawing of the village where she could remember living, with a church and a house in which she lived. And she knew that in that life she had died in childbirth, giving birth to her eighth child. And Jenny was born into this life with this strong feeling of unfinished business. She wanted somehow, if she could, to find that past life family and bring them together. And she did some research. I think she put an advertisement into the papers in Dublin, and a clergyman got in touch with her because he recognized some of the information she was giving. And the end of the story is quite remarkable, because it was established that a lady called Mary Sutton had died in Malahide at about the time that Jenny indicated. She had eight children. Her husband was alcoholic, and Jenny had indicated that as well. And once she, as Mary Sutton, died, he was unable to keep the family together. So they were all put out to foster homes, except one, which was the eldest child, whose name was Sonny. But Sonny, after about 6 months of living alone with his father, had enough, and he ran away from home. Now, the interesting thing is that Jenny went back to Malahide, having made contact with Sonny by letter and speaking to him on the phone, and then went back with a TV crew and a researcher who had done some checking, and made a documentary about that reunion. And it was discovered that some of the children from her past life had been living just streets away from each other and were totally unaware of that, because when they were separated, it was agreed by the authorities that they should not be kept in touch with each other, which was a very sad state of affairs. So Jenny actually went back in this life and reunited them, brought them together. And I have made a number of TV appearances in studios over here with Jenny and with Sonny, her past life son. And it's always amused me when they'd be sitting side by side on the TV couch, and the interviewer would talk to each of them. And if Sonny was being questioned, he would nod to this much younger lady sitting by his side and refer to her as his mother. And she likewise would nod to this elderly gentleman and talk about him as her son. But they came to accept that's exactly what that relationship was. A lovely case. Sonny has now passed away, unfortunately. But she wrote a book called Yesterday's Children, and a made-for-TV movie of that story was produced in the US. So it's quite widely known. But I was very involved in the early stages when the book came out, and as I say, got to know both Jenny and her past life son very well. So it's a fascinating story.
Well, I tell you, your book is just loaded with just so many interesting things about reincarnation, and I'm going to really stress to our audience, pick it up, The Big Book of Reincarnation. I guess you can find it on Amazon, is that correct?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And so I have really enjoyed this time that we've had today, and so I hope that you come back and talk to us again. There's so much in this book that we could we could talk about. We just really skimmed the surface on it. But Roy, it's been my pleasure to have you on Starseed Radio Academy. And we just came back from England. I wish we'd have known you then. We could have stopped by and said hello. But maybe on our next trip we'll be able to see you. So
that would be good.
So anyway, thank you so much. And now back to you, Ariel.
Thank you.
Well, this is Ariel, and I have to apologize because I called Roy Robert, and I'm going to have to go back and edit the show because I was just really embarrassed about that, and I want to say I'm so sorry, Roy. It's Roy Stemmen, the book, big book of reincarnation.
Well, Mercury's retrograde, so you're forgiven.
Mercury got me a good one, so I was just I was so upset with myself for that, but I will go back and fix it. So, well, this has really been a show that's just packed full of all kinds of interesting and great information, and I want to thank you so much. We do have just a few minutes, hang on a second. Anastasia, your microphone got turned off. Let me turn it back on. There you go. Okay. So, Anastasia, what did you think about that?
Well, I'm just blown away. It's just incredible. I'm just all ears. I've just soaked it up. Wonderful. This was Lavendar's segment was great. Not enough time to talk about that. That was just awesome. Rings true to every core of my being and all of my experience that I've had with working with energy. So thank you, Lavendar. You are so true blue, and it's just beautiful. And the guest was incredible. Very reasonable man, and really gives us a lot of evidence for people that have an issue with it. We don't have an issue with it, but it's fascinating stuff. It was terrific.
It sure is. Well, we are having some callers that want to come on the air, but until they are done with our producer, Chris, we'll have to just kind of chat here for a moment. And as we have just found out, in case you didn't know, Mercury is retrograde, and it can wreak havoc with communications, and it will be retrograde. It just went on Saturday, so we've got about 3 weeks of this.
Well,
so,
interestingly enough, I got cut off. I got kicked off the show into Lavendar's segment and couldn't get back on because I got a circuit busy. So there you go. Took me a long time to get back on.
That's just typical. I saw that happened, and I was watching for you to come back because I knew you would.
Yeah, the line went dead, so there's more Mercury retrograde stuff.
And it's going to be retrograde till the 7th of August.
Wow, this is a good long one.
Well,
okay.
Buckle up, Buttercup. So for maybe those of you that don't have the astrological training on Mercury retrograde, it's just a good time to finish up old things, to organize, kind of just think about things, contemplate, decide what you're going to do when it goes direct. But it's not a good time for anything electronic, mechanical, and that includes your brain, your computer, your brain computer. And it's also not a good time to sign contracts, legal agreements, because you just have to be like really triple redundant to make sure that everything's very clear, because misunderstandings are rampant during this time. And so you can read up on it. You can go on the internet and just Google Mercury retrograde and find out more about that. But it happens 3 times a year. So we have our caller ready to go. We are going to be talking just a second here. We're going to be talking to Mary. Hello, Mary. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. You have a question for Lavendar?
Yeah, I do. I was looking through my chart and have Mars at 25 degrees and then 4 houses at 26 degrees. And so I found it interesting and wondered if the houses play the same role as the planets in terms of the kind of genetic encoding?
Yes. What happens with the the angles of the houses show where the events take place, and that opens up a galactic window of observation for the planets when they transit that house to be activated through something we call universal code, and it has to do with the galactic frequencies from many different species. So just because a person doesn't have any planets that are 25, 26, or 27 degrees, but they have house cusps, it does show that there is an activation. Like, I don't have any planets that are 25, 26, or 27 degrees. However, all of my house cusps are 26 or 27.
Wow.
I thought was kind of interesting since I came up with discovery of star markings. So does that answer your question?
Yes, and then it does. I also have the sun at 28 degrees. Does that apply to that or not so much?
If it's in Scorpio or Taurus, it could apply because it's still part of that Pleiadian frequency. What sign is your sun?
It's in Gemini.
Oh, Gemini. Is it 28 degrees in how many minutes? Do you know?
It says 28, 15, 13.
Okay. That really has to do with, you know, it's getting ready to change signs. So it gives you the window of observation through your mental processes going to the next sign. So yeah.
Right. Thank you. The other question I had was about the pyramids in Giza, and I know you did the activation. I have discovered a past life where I was a priestess in Egypt. And I also have been brought two stones from Giza, and they seem to be different rock. I think one was like the base of the pyramid, and one was from an outside covering, I think was what was suggested to me, and they have very different energy kind of frequency, it feels like.
I really don't, you know, those energies are very, very old, and I don't know what they're made of. I don't know if they're, you know, if they're granite or I don't know.
Right.
I just know more about quartz and amethyst than anything, I guess.
And I just wondered if that's indicative of anything, of having the pyramid brought to you.
Say that again.
I just wondered if that sounded indicative of anything, to have a pyramid brought to you.
Well, everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you just need to meditate about that and be with it and see how it makes you feel.
Okay, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks for calling, Mary.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, honey.
Okay, well, if we have anybody, any other callers with a question, please press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. We only have a few minutes left.
Well, this was just a terrific program, and what Lavendar had to tell us was really, really important. And, you know, we may have to listen to that a few times to wrap our heads around it, but it's all very vital information for staying in alignment.
It certainly is. It is the key. It is the absolute key.
It really is, and there really isn't any alignment without it. So it's pretty fundamental to our growth. So
it
just want to put that out there. Mm-hmm. This is probably one of the most important programs we've ever aired, in my estimation. So all that information is just so vital and delicious. And just really grateful that you put that out there, that we've got that, and that people need it.
They do, and I might comment that each week our listening audience is growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, several thousand people every week, so it's really a good feeling to know that this information is getting to the people that want it.
Absolutely.
And if you know, as Lavendar has always said, truth knows its own source. And if what you hear on this program resonates as true, then we're just thrilled about that. And if it doesn't, there's no judgment about it. You just have to be loyal to your own truth.
Yeah.
And we put it out there for those who resonate to it, and in a hope of empowering the star seeds on the planet.
You bet.
So, well, having said that, and no other questions, I think it's time to say thank you to everyone for tuning in, and we do appreciate your loyalty and your following us. We will be back next week at the same time with more interesting information and helpful information to empower Starseed. So on behalf of our whole staff here, the whole Starseed Radio Academy team, thank you so much for listening, everyone, and we'll say good night now.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
See you next week. Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.